Welcome to another episode of the podcast, Find Your Sustainability, where we have deep conversations about the meaning and varying perspectives of sustainability. Today, we are speaking with Nicole Hagerman-Miller. Nicole serves as the Managing Director of Biomimicry 3.8, a certified B Corp and social enterprise dedicated to helping change makers create a more sustainable world by emulating nature's designs and core principles. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So it's really nice to have you on the podcast today. Always love talking to you and appreciate your perspective. But I wanted to start by asking you how you're doing these days as we begin to navigate out of a global pandemic, much like the cicada emergence.
Well, thank you for asking. I'm doing well. I always am hesitant to answer that question because I understand that people can be in not so good situations. So I feel very fortunate that I live in Montana, a place where I have access to nature. I can get outside. My work wasn't impacted heavily by COVID. And so overall, like, I feel very grateful coming out of COVID and coming out of, I think, the awakening that so many people had. And I think I am so hopeful that the awakening stays rich and conscious for people, and that there was so much awareness, I think, that occurred for people in the value of slowing down and pausing and getting outside. And I think all of that surfaced was just really inspiring to see happen in the world. So this is a really long answer to your question, but I'm really well, and I'm really hopeful, and I'm really encouraged by some of the things that we did see. As much as there was the horrible and the restless and the unnerving and the scary aspects of it, there were also some really beautiful kind of outcomes of COVID, and I'm choosing to focus on those silver linings. So with that, it kind of embodies me with, you know, an overall feeling of being well and grateful.
Would you say that nature was a big part of your pandemic experience for you and your family? And you're in Montana, so I know it was cold during a lot of the pandemic, but also know that you are not afraid of the cold.
Well, I don't know about that, Lee. I feel like as I get older in my years, my like tolerance for cold goes down just a little bit each year. So yeah, absolutely. Nature was a massive part of being able to be resilient in such an unnerving time. I think the thing that I often think about is last spring when, you know, COVID was at its height. I remember sitting in my yard and being like, wow, these birds are so loud and everything is so green. And, you know, I work with an amazing group of biologists. And so we were talking about that. And it was actually Janine Benyus, the co-founder of our company. She said, you know, I'm not so sure that it is different. I just think that we're noticing it for the first time in a way that we've never noticed it before. And that really kind of struck me. And I did start noticing things in a way that I hadn't before. And I think I was like chalking it up to like, oh, the world is slowing down, and therefore like nature is really like showing her glory. But I think it's always there. It's just we're not always looking in that way. So I definitely became more conscious of what was happening in nature and having that space, as I mentioned earlier, to kind of slow down and really enjoy it in a more conscious way and in a more grateful way, because we sought nature for sanity in so many of those months. So absolutely, I think it was a part of being able to get through this past year and a half. But then also in every day, I think it's part of my wellness strategy for sure.
Well, you sure are fortunate to have your founder, Janine Benyus, on your team. There's no better person, in my opinion, to remind us to stop and pay attention to what's going on in the natural world.
I'm grateful for that every day, and all of our team. And I probably share this story a lot, but it's one of my favorite memories of actually first meeting Janine. We were traveling together and we were with a client group that we were working with from Natura. And we were within a city, but we were kind of in this tropical forest area that was like a protected zone. And we were going for a walk in there to just kind of look at some of the local species and just kind of look at what we could learn from those species. And I remember the organizers, they had planned this 3-mile loop, right? This 1 hour, 3 miles, totally doable, right? Like that's a lovely, nice stroll. Oh, for our group in like the hour, we got like not even a couple like yards into the walk and we just kind of like stayed there. And so I think it's such a great example of you don't have to go far. And I think for me, like I was always like one of those people who was like, must get to the top of the mountain and this time must get back, like must like, you know, have this sort of cardio experience, like was always kind of so focused on like a goal. And I think she's really been such a teacher for me and kind of learning that value of slowing down and learning that you don't have to like go even on a 3-mile walk to see all these different things. You can just sit in one spot in your backyard and have the same experience.
So what were some of the biggest challenges and takeaways for you and your team at Biomimicry 3.8 during the past 12 to 14 months?
I think we were all very grateful that we were grounded in biomimicry and that we looked to nature to help us make our decisions, to help, you know, make more informed decisions about what we want to do and what we want to put our energy into. So we're grounded in that as a company. So I think that gave us a stability that maybe others didn't have, is that we were already kind of, I think we were kind of well-grounded, right? Like we had this belief and understanding and ethos that's like, there is something bigger holding us and that we all are working to protect that and to be in service to that. So I think that purpose and embodying that purpose keeps us grounded. So I think in, you know, one thing that we saw is that like, while yes, it was scary, while yes, it was unnerving, while yes, there were so many unknowns, we knew that the work that we are doing and will continue to do was becoming more and more important. And I think not that we would have chosen this way for it to become illuminated, but I think because of that awakening, because of that awareness, we were seeing more interest in our work. And I think that was encouraging for us, certainly as a team, to see other companies wake up. I mean, in full transparency, we did have several projects drop off. A lot of our projects that were product focused, those got tabled. But the ones that were around our built environment work, building did not slow down during COVID. Like that absolutely kept, and it even in some cases grew. And the other piece of it that I think we're seeing is oftentimes we really had to work to kind of create that that system, that web for people to show like, yes, you're going to start applying biomimicry to a R&D project over here, but there's so many other applications, right? Like we would have to kind of ease people into that in terms of seeing the holistic capacity of what biomimicry can bring. And I think now what we're seeing is a much more awareness or an easier understanding of systems thinking and systems approach to problem solving. Because, well, I can't say I know for sure, but it seems like that was easier for us in the last year. Something within COVID triggered that for people to be able to kind of understand like, oh, we can't look at issues in isolation anymore. We have to look at things systemically. Once you start looking at like a whole system operating biomedically, what does that yield in terms of impact? And that conversation has been a unique one in the past in terms of organizations that were able to go there. Like Interface is a great example. We've been working with them for almost 20 years and they got it. But when we would work with other companies that oftentimes would see like biomimicry as like the shiny object, like, oh, cool, like let's try biomimicry. They would see it as a very kind of one-off, like let's apply it here. And we really had to work very hard to help them see kind of the system's benefit of doing biomimicry. And obviously that's challenging because, you know, companies are and organizations can be deeply siloed and it's hard to kind of break those and to connect parts. But what I've seen is that conversation is becoming easier.
I want to back up a little and talk about your journey that led you to work in the sustainability space. Can you share some of your story that explains why you care so much about helping people and places? I'm always really interested in, you know, people like you that have remained connected to nature over the years. I think it's an important part of those of us that are interested in sustainability education. How do we get people to care?
Yeah.
And you clearly care. And so there was something about your childhood, your journey that just kind of led you to this work.
Certainly my upbringing, you know, growing up in Montana, being connected to nature, indirectly, I had that probably within my DNA of wanting to take care of this place. I also come from a family that has 5 generations of being in Montana that has worked the earth, you know, farming and ranching. So I think taking care of the earth is probably somewhere embedded in my genetic code. But I don't think I was conscious about it until I did my work at Overstock and was doing sourcing. And when I first started sourcing, it was funny, our CEO described it as like, Nicole, you have like a dream job. You get to travel the world and shop, which is a really glorified way of saying what I did. It wasn't quite that luxurious. But I think what that gave me is the exposure to how our products are made. And I don't think most people are privy to that process of, you know, just any product that's in front of us. And we've become such a consumer-oriented culture and that drives like our whole economic systems. To start to understand that more deeply, it really impacted me in how do we design better in a way that isn't having these negative externalities. Because it was clear as soon as I started getting into the sourcing space is half of my job was figuring out how to mitigate for the externalities. So I just became really curious of like, well, how do we not even have that conversation? Like, how do we design up front so that we're not spending all of our time trying to offset those externalities? So that was probably, and that was in probably 2003, 2004, I kind of had that awareness. And it was one of those things that kind of changed me forever. And Lee, I'm sure you've had these moments where it's like, I remember coming back from a trip. I spent a lot of time in Shanghai. I set up an office there and would go to India quite a bit. And I remember I had just come back from this tour of being in China and India and was back home. And I was sitting in my apartment. I was just like looking around at all the stuff. I don't have a ton of stuff. I mean, it was just like looking at all of that and just thinking like, wow, this has to change. Like, I want to be part of not just supplying stuff for people. I want to be part of giving people things that make them feel good and make them feel beautiful and, you know, give them happiness, but not at the expense of the environment and not at the expense of somebody's health and not at the expense of all the things that manufacturing can do. So for me, I think it was just one of those moments where once you see it, you can't unsee it. I just forever wanted to change it at that point. And so that was kind of when I started my journey, deepening my understanding of sustainability, of CSR, and really getting into that world. And then once you start into that space of sustainability, you can't unsee it, and it's all you want to do. So I've dedicated my work and my career and a lot of what I do personally around this space.
Thank you for sharing. Biomimicry 3.8 really is a unique organization. How do you describe what you do, let's say, to the semi-interested uncle during a holiday meal?
That's such a great question, Lee, because I do get that question. You know, well, luckily, biomimicry is definitely becoming more and more in the zeitgeist. So when I say biomimicry, you know, more often it's like, oh, cool. Well, tell me what you do with biomimicry. So at least like we're making that transition into I don't have to explain what biomimicry is anymore. But in some cases I do. And the simplest way to explain it is that we look to nature for innovation and time-tested strategies. And, you know, the 3.8 is the 3.8 billion years of R&D that exists in nature that we can tap into to essentially de-risk our innovation process. And that's the language I use a lot in business. And it really depends on who we're talking to, because there's so many amazing components of biomimicry that what we lean into in biomimicry is largely dependent on what that person's interest is. So short answer to your question is, if someone asks me, I usually flip the question a little bit and say, well, tell me a little bit more about you and what you're interested in. And then I can find a nice parallel for them, because there's so many examples of biomimicry and how we look to nature to do that. But it's even more of, I mean, we can talk about it at more of even a spiritual level, right? Of like how people are reconnecting to nature to be better humans. Like, so there's so many ways that we can talk about it. And And for us at B3.8, the way that we often lead people into biomimicry is what we call the three seeds of biomimicry. And that's reconnect. So kind of reconnecting to nature, like the ethos, like, why are we doing this? And then the emulation. So that's a lot of what you hear in the media about biomimicry. So looking at spider silk to make stronger fibers, right? So emulating what nature is doing. And then that entry point is really being able to kind of look at those seeds and being like, well, okay, well, is this person really interested in the science and wanting to understand that piece of it? And then the third is the ethos of it, right? So for me, like, that was my entry point into, like, I want to design a better world. I knew there was a better way to design. But some people, their entry point is very much like, I want to reconnect with nature to better understand what the potential is from a human capacity standpoint, right? So there's kind of these entryways into biomimicry that help people understand how it can be applied and how they could use it in their everyday life.
You and I have worked most recently on the Project Positive initiative through B3.8. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the basic concept of generous or positive design and how it differs from a lot of what people refer to these days as net zero.
Yeah, I think it's something like I'm so passionate about and so excited about, and I'm so happy we've had the chance to kind of work together in this project. So what Project Positive is really a collaboration of companies and organizations that are really looking to change the conversation a bit about what does it mean to be regenerative, kind of moving away from the space of doing less bad, but moving into the space of positive. And what we talk about is regenerative, right? So much of the conversation is about net positive and being positive and regenerative. But what does that mean, right? Like, how do you define that? And I think that's where we saw a lot of opportunity for biomimicry to really play a role in helping define what does positive mean? What does regenerative mean? Because nature is the best blueprint we could possibly ask for teaching us how to do things regeneratively. That's what nature does. That's how it succeeds, is it gives back. It keeps producing. It keeps providing in a benefit way, in a life-friendly way. So how can we look to that as a model for how we can design our world? And how can we look to that as a measure in particular is a lot of the work around Project Positive, which is looking at using nature as a kind of what we call a model, mentor, and measure for regenerative. And the premise of this work is something that Janine talked about in her book from 1997 and in her TED Talk, you know, in early 2000. So it's not a new idea. But what we've been able to formalize a little bit more and pilot is this notion that we can quantify, we can measure the benefits that a ecosystem produces. These are the ecosystem services that a wildland can produce. So how much carbon is being sequestered, how much air is being filtered, how many particulates are being removed, how much biodiversity is being generated. These are positive benefits that our wildlands are producing for us for free as humans, right? And so once we start to look at that as a quantifiable unit of measure of this kind of wildland next door, and we can understand, oh, this is how much carbon it's sequestering, this is how much water it's filtering, that can become a performance target and guideline for us, a local target and guideline for our performance standards. When we first started doing this work, we were really kind of talking about like ecological performance standards, really looking at the local and native ecosystems to help us make locally informed decisions around what positive looks like. And so we've been piloting this work for about 5 years and really have some incredible examples with Interface and Ford, Jacobs and HOK and others to really kind of demonstrate, you know, what does it look like to kind of set these aspirational targets of performing like the ecosystem next door, benefiting not only the ecosystem itself, but also the people who are operating and living in those communities, right? So it's this idea that, you know, people and planet are not separate, right? The benefits that we get, you know, ecologically are also socially and economically beneficial as well. So kind of tying that all together in a way to kind of start to show people how these actions that we can take to design for regenerative are in service to long-term business success, local ecological success, and social health and well-being. So that's kind of been the premise and the vision of the work of Project Positive. And what Project Positive does is kind of bring the companies together that are doing this work to share best practices, to share ideas, to share challenges, so that we can really advance the work in the time that is necessary. There is a real sense of urgency for us making an impact. Like, we have these like existential crises happening, you know, and we're making these like incremental moves around this. And so what we're trying to do is just to really kind of show, you know, how this vision works, but then how these companies can work with one another, learning from one another to expedite the learnings and expedite the application and outcomes that are generated.
Do you have an example or two of a partnership that you could share that kind of describes to the listeners a cool project that you're working on?
Yeah. As I mentioned earlier in the call, we've been long-term partners with Interface. They manufacture carpet tiles, and they're continually ranked in the top five most sustainable companies in the world, right in line with Unilever, Patagonia. And a lot of their vision came from their CEO, Ray Anderson, who just had this incredible epiphany. He read Paul Hawkins' book, The Ecology of Commerce, and that was really just kind of this pivotal moment for him. And that's really when he engaged Janine Benyus, our co-founder, to be part of his dream team with Paul Hawkins to really rethink what the carpet tile manufacturing industry could look like. And then Interface really took a lead and has been a leader in sustainability since. So this was about 6 years ago, we were having this conversation and they were looking ahead and saying, okay, we're going to reach our 2020 sustainability goals. What's next? What are we aiming for next? And that's really kind of when this notion of, well, what is it that Interface can control? Like, what is it that they can really have an impact on? And we started really talking about their manufacturing facilities and developed this idea of, well, what if your factories function like a forest? So we started to pilot it. We started to look at, okay, well, what's it going to take for this to really get traction and have success? And at the same time, the company was building a new headquarters in Atlanta, as well as redesigning one of its operational facilities in LaGrange, Georgia. So while we had identified our first pilot as Australia, we did the work there to kind of test out some of the just kind of thinking and ideas, but then we quickly pivoted and brought it over, first starting with their LaGrange manufacturing facility, and just looked at like, well, how is the Southern Piedmont forest operate? Like, what is it doing? Like, how much carbon is it sequestering and when and what cycles? And we really did this kind of deep analysis and then brought that back to Interface and say, okay, here's what the forest around you is doing. How might your factory start doing this? So we really kind of landed on, well, what could the factory do to generate benefits around these key areas of carbon, air, soil, habitat? But we kind of honed in on like, okay, well, this is what the forest next door is doing. How can the Interface manufacturing facilities operate in a way that is producing like benefits? And we kind of honed in on these five categories and then just started looking at things such as bioswales and green roofs and HVAC systems. Like, so we just took all these different design interventions that they could integrate today, but just started doing so in a way that demonstrated how they could do so holistically to create these kind of multifunctional benefits in the same way that a forest does, right? It's a system. It's not one single tree sequestering the carbon to benefit all. The soil has to play a role. The air has to play a role. Like, everything plays a role for it all to work. So it was, I think, that pilot that first started us to think about the role that Interface could play. What did they have within their sphere of influence and control around some of these things that we identified? And really for them, that was kind of this aha moment of, okay, well, we're building this new headquarters in downtown Atlanta. It's in the same eco region, same kind of goals that we're setting. So what could they do in an urban environment as well? So we had this really exciting opportunity to look at what would it look like for its actual manufacturing facility to function like a forest in its environment, but then also to translate that and to look at scale of, okay, well, what does that look like if we apply that to an urban environment? Over the project, there were several different design interventions that focused on multiple different things. One of the big design interventions for their headquarters in Atlanta was the system that they integrated and how that really was able to help them look at kind of the holistic opportunities around the water that they were intaking and what benefit did that provide from the city level and how they were giving some of those benefits back. So we wanted to get feedback from the sustainability community around this vision. And we would talk about it as factory as a forest, this notion that people should start thinking about their manufacturing facilities as opportunities to create these benefits, right? And Erin Mizan will say this a lot. She's the vice president of their sustainability. Like, she still had to kind of grapple with the fact that their manufacturing facilities were hot, uncomfortable places to work. So how could they solve for that? And some of the design interventions that we integrated really solved for that, really made them more comfortable places, like applying some of the shading and cooling and some of these kind of broader ideas. And they're not always like super novel, you know, super innovative, right? They're just kind of looking at these like holistic strategies of these forests and what are some of the abstract principles that we can take from that. From that kind of evolution of the work and then talking about it, this notion of like factories that function like forests, we really started to engage other companies that had manufacturing facilities that were really interested in having them be beyond less bad, right? And that's really when we started piquing the interest of Ford Motor Company. And they have within their sustainability strategy, one of their key pillars is positive impact. What does positive impact look like for Ford? And knowing how much of their impact was in the manufacturing space, we really started this exciting conversation of piloting for them, not only in their manufacturing, but then in their office spaces that they were building. So we're in that work right now. It's still doing it. It's been about a year into that project, and it's evolving in a really exciting way. I think what's important for people to see is that progress, right? And to have, and this is the whole point of Project Positive, if there's safety in numbers, as the more people start doing this work and learning from one another, we can get more people interested and integrated into thinking this way and to kind of applying biomimicry from a design process from the very beginning.
Well, I have to say that all of this work has influenced us a great deal as we've been imagining a campus as a forest. Our dream of creating a campus as a forest is still alive and well, and it's moving forward. And I look forward to giving you a more detailed update soon.
To build on your last point, with campus as a forest, this idea that the building itself is part of the faculty and that, you know, we're learning from the building itself and that there's so much in that conversation. I think that's something that's really exciting about the campus as a forest notion is that we have these buildings that are producing all these benefits, that students are involved in the operations and the maintenance and the benefits that are being produced, the relationship with the community. So I think that's something that's really exciting about the campus as a forest notion is there's so much learning that can happen. And it's a fundamental shift in how campuses think about, you know, their cost centers, right? If you think about how much education can come out of just the building alone, in addition to the R&D that's done there, I think that's a really exciting aspect of this vision.
I agree. And talk about a living laboratory, that's relatively cliche these days, but I mean, this would be the epitome of a living laboratory. And yeah, to think about the buildings themselves as faculty members, as being part of the team that's helping us to instruct about the built environment design and the interplay between the natural world and the built environment. We're extremely excited to be able to see this dream manifested and you know, bring people here to Appalachian State to, you know, experience a campus as a forest. I happen to know that you are a fan of fungi, specifically the mycelium as they thread their way in and out of our natural world. Could you tell us about why that's so exciting?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, I am such a big fan of connectors and communication, and like how communication is like the bridge that links us together. And as humans, we have a hard time doing that. Communication isn't always easy, but I think I've been so fascinated with mycelium because it's just this amazing network of communication that happens that, that is just this like really beautiful way of saying, okay, this, you know, like in the ecosystem, if there is a disease happening or if there's something that is bothering its particular species, like how mycelium like plays this like really important role of communicating that to the species next door, right? To saying, hey, this is happening. You need to adapt over here to be able to be resilient to this disease that's spreading or to this, you know, bacteria that's happening. And I think just the role that it plays in connecting the ecosystem and being that connector, I think has always inspired me, potentially because I, maybe as a human, I often like to play that role as a connector. I'm so fascinated by all the different things that, that exist and what people are doing. And there's so much beautiful, inspiring things happening in the world. And so how do we connect that to like really make that thrive and support that? So I think that's probably why I've attached to it, is I see myself in it a little bit, which probably sounds weird. But I think there's just so something so beautiful and fascinating about this, you know, notion of the wood wide web and like how everything underground is kind of connected to these mycelium networks.
It doesn't sound weird to me because I resonate completely. You and I are both connectors, and that's why we work so well together. Yeah, nature's internet, right? The original internet.
Yep, exactly.
So we have time for one more question. What really excites you these days about your work, and what drags you out of bed and gets you pumped about coming in these days?
The field in which I work in, biomimicry, it would get me out of bed any day, no matter what the project, because I think the opportunity to really influence how we're designing our world is exciting. I think what I'm most excited about right now is probably a combination of two things. Definitely the work that we're doing with Project Positive and really connecting with a lot of this kind of global movement around nature positive and how we can use biomimicry as a design tool to really create regenerative design and really connect that with the social aspects as well. We talked earlier about the environmental and social. I'm really excited about that merger, that we're no longer kind of talking about environmental issues over here and social issues over here, and that they're very much intertwined and people are seeing that. And so I'm really excited about that. And I'm really excited about our work that we're doing in biomimicry, learning from nature to really show people how it is in service to human benefit. I think historically there's been like this conservation aspect of our work, which is equally important and exciting. But I think once we can tie it to the social, it kind of hits people at a deeper level and it makes it a little bit more real and tangible. And I think bearing witness to that and seeing that actualized and being materialized in the work that we're doing right now is really exciting. For us as a company, what we've started to become aware of is that the value of our work is storytelling, being able to kind of tell people that story of place. This is the value of this place. This is the value of this ecosystem. This is the benefit that it generates. This is what we can learn from it. This is how can it form design. And for us, we've been so kind of heads down focusing on that design that we are just recognizing the benefit that we can create as a company is to be much more conscious about that storytelling. And while we were storytelling within our projects, we weren't really storytelling in a way that gave the world access to it, that gave our internal champions the tools that they needed to kind of bring the rest of the people along. A lot of the work that, you know, we have a mutual friend with Lee Sharp, and the work that she's done at Harvard Sustainability Program to really kind of, you know, introduce this concept of sensing and piloting and bringing people along. And the role that we play at B3Eight is really that storytelling that supports that, because everyone has a deep connection to nature. You know, no matter who you are, where you come from, you have that connection. So being able to tap into that and tap into place is something that I'm really excited about, something we're starting to put energy around. And I'm really excited about some of the stuff that we'll be coming out with in the next year around kind of the value of biomimicry as this proven pathway to regenerative. So those are kind of two things that obviously are connected, but I'm very much excited about. If you're really interested in biomimicry and want to learn more, there's a couple key sites I can send you to. First, our site is biomimicry.org. You can learn all about our work and what we do. Also, we have a blog, synapse.bio, which talks a lot about how we apply biomimicry. We have a sister organization called the Biomimicry Institute, which has an amazing website called asknature.org. So if you're out and about or if you're a designer, and by the way, everyone is a designer, whether you're designing a operations plan or a product or, you know, your family finances, like everyone is a designer, right? So if you are looking at how to create something and you want to know how nature does it, you can literally go to this website, asknature.org, and type in the question, like, how does nature do cooling? How does nature, you know, manage temperature? How does nature, you can look at these different kind of questions and get the biological answer. So it's a great website, great resource. Highly encourage everyone to take a look at that. You could spend hours.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much for your time and thanks for being on the podcast. We really appreciate you and your work and just have a wonderful rest of your day.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Lee. It's so good to connect with you and to be on this podcast with you.
Find Your Sustainability is a production of the University Communications Department at Appalachian State. It's hosted by Appalachian's Chief Sustainability Officer, Lee Ball. For more information about Appalachian State sustainability, check out sustain.appstate.edu. For more podcasts, videos, and articles related to Appalachian State, check out today.appstate.edu.